Hello, this is Dr. Ryan McConnell, your host with Spilling the DPT, and we'll be using a solo flying interview style episodes for physical therapy students at any level of professional education to engage on hot topics that you wish you had learned in academia. Weekly episodes will include practical survival guides as well as venting on issues surrounding professionalism all the way through healthcare management and leadership. All this delivered with some comedic relief and storytelling to remind you all that we are human. And this is your one-stop shop to receive doses of encouragement and motivation through interview format to improve your PT clout. All right, we're here with Celia, which it's now Fonche, going from Chapuis, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to talk a little bit about kind of some of the logistical topics that we talked in a management and strategic planning course and kind of how it's applied to the workforce just really in the last, I guess it's been almost 6 months or close to that, working out in the field. So Celia is a student physical therapist, but will be taking her board very, very soon. And soon, if all things go well, will be a doctor of physical therapy at that point. So Celia, if you don't mind, just to introduce yourself real quick, let the people know where you're at and, you know, what stage of your training and all of that you're in, and take it from here.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah. So I'm a third year physical therapy student. And yeah, I guess the academic side is almost to a close. I take my boards in 5 days. So I've been studying rigorously, but yeah, it's been crazy with COVID. You know, no one thinks that you're going to be doing your clinical rotations in the middle of a pandemic, but I did. So thankfully I was able to kind of work around some things. One of my clinicals was canceled completely. It was the inpatient neuro rehab. So that one, a lot of the hospitals have just completely canceled and closed doors to students. So a lot of my classmates too have had those clinicals canceled. We had several people who were off of they weren't doing anything other than, I guess, trying to study for boards for, you know, close to 8 weeks. So it's been crazy, but we made it through. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to just, you know, closing this chapter and starting my career as a PT.
Yeah. And that can be like extremely stressful because I know really I was trying to plan almost a year in advance, like where I was going to be living and how the logistics of where I was going to go for my internships. And then on top of that, you have the stress of, I need to pass this thing to allow me to even do what I'm practicing, you know, as an intern. And that's incredibly stressful, incredibly difficult. And that's kind of where we're going to go with this conversation is like with all of that, almost everybody in your class around the country is trying to find a job. They're also trying to figure out like, what does physical therapy look like in the future? And now all of a sudden, some of the course content, like a management and strategic planning, is more relevant, and you see that. So just what I know you mentioned before we ever got on air or whatever, that you had kind of noticed a few things that we had talked about in management, and they have been more real and applicable lately to you. Could you speak to some of those?
Yeah, absolutely. So I know, you know, most of your students probably go, I know I did, go into PT school thinking, oh, you know, I'm going to have this big salary, I'm going to be a doctor, and, you know, it's just going to be great. And you get there, and it's really rigorous, and you work really hard for this degree, and then you find out that reimbursement's dropping, and all of a sudden you're kind of sitting in class, and you're shocked during management because you realize salary is a lot lower than you thought it was, and you have all these student loans. And so, yeah, it's I think that learning all that on the front end was extremely advantageous for me as a student, because going into interviews, I started interviewing actually in December. So thankfully, although COVID has affected a lot of my classmates, especially those trying to go into rehab and going into inpatient, not a lot of people are hiring right now because of COVID. But I'm an outpatient. So thankfully I had started earlier before all this hit. And so the negotiation process was very real for me, and, you know, knowing what to ask, I think, was the biggest thing for me. You know, I took a lot of notes during that course on important things to ask, for example, you know, now I'm gonna blank, but thinking like, what, you know, what are your benefits look like? What does your 401k look like? You know, knowing what all those things are, I think is super important, but also knowing what you bring to the table. So I made sure to prepare for all my interviews, and look at, you know, I'm actually going into a specialty. So I'm a pelvic floor physical therapist. So I'll be doing both outpatient orthopedics and pelvic. But I used that to my advantage. Like I knew that not a lot of people are treating pelvic floor. So that was something that I bring to the table that the person next to me probably doesn't. And then having other certifications, knowing all those things beforehand and knowing that that empowers you as the interviewee, I think was super helpful. But also kind of knowing where your interviewer is coming from and their perspective as far as, you know, it's expensive to hire on a new PT. It's expensive to train them. So all those things is good to know before you go into it so that you're kind of on the same playing field in the sense of you know what they're expecting of you.
Yeah, that's a huge thing as far as kind of understanding how to leverage your strengths, but also if your strengths don't match up at all with what the corporation or private practice or hospital system in general is looking for, then all of a sudden the conversation goes a completely different way. And you're right, there are expenses with that. And I think even more now than ever, companies are looking at how do I control, you know, all of the financial barriers that or overhead costs that are happening when there isn't really as much demand for physical therapy, or at least there wasn't for definitely a couple month period. And there's still fear that that might happen. There's fear that that government shutdowns and things like that could influence demand again in the future. But that being said, obviously you hit a nerve probably for everybody who's listening is you expect to get paid more and then find out maybe too late that it's not what you anticipated. And then you kind of find, I hate to put it this way, but you're scratching and clawing for, you know, nickels on the dollar or pennies on the dollar. And there is some resources. APTA just put together a really compelling paper basically saying that all of this stuff should be disclosed before you ever even enter physical therapy school, and that it maybe should be covered a whole lot more about how to manage that debt and some of these other things throughout the curriculum, so it's not so shocking. Employers would tell you that it's not their fault and you did this to yourself sort of thing, which is a negative way to think of it. But all that to say, there's still potential in negotiating. So what did you find were some of the most intimidating things during negotiations? And you can start with even just the initial interview process. Like, hey, this is what we talked about, and kind of give a layout of like when salary and some of these other things were brought up.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I interviewed heavily with the company that I'm with now, and it wasn't just like one big interview. I probably interviewed with like, I would say like 6 or 7 different people, but it wasn't formal. So what I did was I went to the head director of the area and talked to them about looking at different clinics that I'm interested in. And so I went to each of those clinics and spent a day there and just got a feel for, you know, their caseload, got a feel for the environment, the work environment, all that's super important. And so I did that at several clinics. And then from there, I had a little bit more formal interview. And so that one was more of me just asking, you know, all the questions I talked about earlier. So I asked them, you know, what the 401k looked like, what benefits looked like, you know, what onboarding process was like. I asked them things like, what's mentorship like in this company? Those things are super important, that you draw out so you can see that if you are looking at other companies, you know, what's going to give me the most bang for my buck, where do I fit the best? That was a little bit more formal. And then, it wasn't until my interview with like, I would say the the big boss or the I don't know, the big area director, that finances came up. And so I think that was probably the most uncomfortable question to ask, was salary, PTO. I remember, like, I tried to pull personally, I was like, you know, these are your core values. Balance is a big one for me. And so I kind of played off that, like, you know, part of balance is having time off and having time to recharge so that you're fully there when you are in the clinic. And so learning how to, you know, discuss those awkward topics professionally and honestly, I think was something that was a good growing experience for me. But definitely finances was the most uncomfortable for sure. There's just no great way to, like, bring it up, but I brought it up using their company values.
Did you, were you offered a range, a specific number? Was that a total package valuation or just a salary? Kind of describe what that looked like when you were talking about it.
Yeah. So actually, both people I interviewed with, about salary, they didn't offer anything up. Both of them asked me, so what are you looking for salary? And I talked to other students and they said the same thing. Like, no one was like, hey, we're going to offer you this on the front end. They all wanted to know what we wanted. And so, after having your class, I was like, I aimed high. I was like, I'm going to go high, and you know, anything, they're going to have to go a little bit lower. I gave them like a pretty high amount that I knew was probably unrealistic, but I was like, why not? I mean, the worst thing they're going to do is shoot it down, you know?
Yeah.
So I aimed higher than the average outpatient. But I didn't just say, hey, I want this much. I said, hey, I want this much, and this is why. And yep. That's the other thing I learned in your class, was as long as you can support why you want something, whether it be, you know, a new product with laser, or if you mm-hmm. want to buy, you know, a new table or whatever, as long as you can support why with numbers, and then you have a much better chance of showing that you deserve it and that it's going to be effective and everything like that. So I told him, this is what I want and this is why. And I used my resume and I used my leverage and my community. Relationships is so important in this field. I think it's half of it, if not more. And so, you know, I'm working in my hometown, so that's a huge advantage as well. I was prepared for that question, but there was no like, hey, we're going to offer you this. It was, so what do you want? And I had to pull a number out, you know?
And that's kind of, it's presented usually as one of two things, and it's either, okay, well, actually three things. So a range, which has its issues, each way has its issues, or a specific salary that we're hiring people in this area for this amount of money. And then the other one is to get an idea, which is the manager's role is kind of getting an idea for what you think your value is, and then deciding, do you even know why your value, like what your valuation is? And I think of it like the Shark Tank. Like, if you go say this company's worth $1 million and you're like, where, how, why? And it sounds like you did your homework and kind of thought of reasons for each location or possibly each corporation, like why that would be valuable. With that being said, usually there's a follow-up to that question. So once you reveal your cards a little bit and say, this is my number, usually the manager, future employer, or just interviewer is going to have something to say about that. What was your reaction or their reaction to your suggestion?
Yeah. So both of them, they didn't chuckle, but they kind of chuckled like, okay, yeah. Like, all right, you know, you're going high. But then they said, you know, they actually, both of them told me that they really appreciated my response and that, you know, I supported it. And they're like, okay, I can really respect that. But they rebutted it with, you know, this is what we're offering most of our new grads. And it was the range, like that range. But they're like, but because of the things that you did present, we can go higher than that. But it wasn't going to be as high as what I wanted, because what I wanted was where clinic directors were being paid, or, you know, people who were in management already. So that's just kind of how it went. I didn't get exactly what I wanted, but there are other things that I drew into my negotiation. So there's other ways to get a number outside of just salary.
So talk a little bit about that. What you don't have to reveal, you know, the secrets of your fringe benefits and whatnot, but what are some of the things that you looked for other compensation, you know, or to negotiate further?
Yeah. So I think that time is more valuable than money a lot of times. So being able to negotiate with time, so paid time off, or, you know, making sure you have your holidays covered that you want, things like that are super important. So time was something I could negotiate with. Student loans, a lot of companies will actually put money towards your student loans. So that's something to look for when you're looking.
Which, just sorry to interrupt, they used to do about 10 years ago, pretty often you'd see these sign-on bonuses or retention bonuses, things like that. And then they disappeared for a little bit, and now they've reappeared, I think, across the country with a lot of companies, but that's just a little background on that.
Yeah. Go ahead. So, you know, things like that, time, also like matching 401k, that's very beneficial down the road. It's hard to see that far down when you're, you know, in your 20s, but it's important. Right. So things like that, you're able to negotiate with. Continuing education, that's a great one. If, you know, they offer a certain thing and they can't get your salary where you want it, getting more Con Ed money is really beneficial, because that shows that you're trying to continue to pursue this career and continue to better yourself. And it's good for the company as well. So that's a good thing you could possibly negotiate with. But that was one thing that we talked about in management, but I found to be extremely beneficial. When I didn't get exactly the salary I wanted, I was able to really negotiate with other things.
Yeah. And to be clear, like whenever you put your number where it was at, that's where and I'm not saying that it's a tactic, but it is, that's that scale or that sliding bar of here's the range that we're talking about, went from, you know, the lower end, a range on a lower end, to probably the range on the higher end. Just because every company's got a little bit of wiggle room and it also is a product of like, how well are you conducting yourself? Even though your expectations are high, is that a good thing or a bad thing? So there's a lot of information exchange just with body language and conversation before that to be transparent with that. Question for you would be, did you have a question that was provided during any part of the interview process that you felt like you stumbled on or were not prepared for? What was the hardest question that was asked of you?
You know, I got kind of lucky, because I kind of came in like guns a-blazing. Like I asked a ton of questions. And the person that I originally interviewed with, that was a more lengthy interview, you know, he kind of like left the floor open to me. And so, and I guess that's a specific type of interviewing tactic or technique. Right. So they didn't ask me, you know, why did you become a PT, or what interests you about, you know, this clinic? It wasn't really like that. It was more like, okay, we know you're interested, so like, let's get down to it. Like, what are your questions? Yeah. But I did prepare for those just in case. So I do know that there's some companies that will actually have you do an eval, like on the spot, really? Like mock eval. Yeah. And I had a couple of friends interview with them, and yeah, so you'd be prepared. I think that if I had interviewed there, that would have been something that would have really caught me off guard, because, you know, it's kind of like a practical, and I don't know about you, but those, I get very nervous and stressed out when I'm having to think like that in front of other people, especially someone interviewing me. That would be extremely intimidating. So I think that would have been like the hardest thing if I had gone through the traditional interview process.
So. Yeah, I'd have to think about that. As far as if it was a mock eval, I could see that, but not being, you know, basically an employer taking you into something that you're not necessarily credentialed for, technically not in the capacity of a student, like internship. That's really interesting to hear. I'm not aware of, like, I didn't never have to deal with that, but that's interesting to hear. I'd have to check, do my homework on like what allows that to happen.
Well, it's not, just to clarify, it's not like on an actual patient or anything.
Okay.
It's, yeah, sorry. Yeah. It's, from what I heard, it's between, it's like, they have kind of a script and they're kind of laying it out for you almost. And then
my knee hurts.
What are you going to do? What special tests, you know, what treatment, that, like that kind of thing. So it's not, yeah, I don't know if they could legally do it on a patient.
Yeah. I think that there would be issues with that, but I wasn't going to say it outright. Very may well be, you know, okay, but doesn't test the face value of that is not great, but I do like the mock interview and kind of OSCE is what they call it. Just like a Q&A to see what you're thinking. And that's kind of interesting to think about. What about, cause it sounds like you interviewed on site as well as away from the location that, or the company that you were interviewing with, or the multiple companies. Did you find that one setting versus the other was more comfortable to interview in?
Yeah. So I actually, my like final big interview where I, you know, there was an offer at place, that was on the phone. Mm-hmm. So that was a little different. Yeah, a lot of them were on site in the clinic, and then my last one was on the phone. If I had to compare the two, I would probably say that the one on the phone was the most, I guess, not uncomfortable, but less comfortable, just because you can't read their body language. And, you know, that's so much of how we communicate. So that was a little different. And I did the whole, you know, look in the mirror thing. That's supposed to be a good tip to whenever you're talking to somebody on the phone in any kind of interview, to look at yourself in the mirror, because you'll smile and they can tell like the inflection in your voice. So yeah, so I tried that. but yeah, I mean, the in-person was pretty comfortable. Thankfully, the people I interviewed with were extremely personable and just really relaxed. So it was really good experience. I'm sure there's situations where it's not that way, but thankfully it was a very comfortable thing for me.
So, and you've probably talked to some of your friends about it. Have they had any horror stories or fun stories that were different than your own?
I know. So some of my friends are still interviewing just because of COVID. So right. A lot of them are going to acute care. And at this point, it's just been really difficult to, a lot of people are offering some PRN. But right now the interview process in that setting, as well as like neuro rehab, have just been really tough.
Yeah.
But yeah, not yet. I wish I had like a really good horror story. But not yet. Yeah, just probably that, just the situation of having to do an eval was like, whoa.
Yeah, that's a good one. That would definitely throw you off. I probably had the traditional ones of like, you know, what's your favorite color, and what are your three strengths and three weaknesses? The same stuff that you almost get in PT school, but I don't think that tells you much about who you're hiring or anything like that. But different topic, sort of. Was there anything else that you felt like that you had learned that made your conversation more valuable during an interview, or on the flip side, that you wish you had gotten more of and would anticipate would be beneficial in the future for a course like that?
That's a good question. I think I would say I didn't necessarily like come in to the interview. I would say let me say it this way. I think the questions that I had in front of me, like I could tell that the person that I spoke with was like impressed. Like he's like, okay, I'm talking to someone who's done their homework. So, I mean, just knowing where they're coming from. So like throwing out the right language, I think was important. Like showing like, hey, this is the price I'm looking for, and this is why. And then having done my homework on the company. So like, I would recommend to anybody, make sure that you look at their core values. Like when we had to create our companies, with our big project for the Shark Tank, we had to create core values, marketing, you know, learning, having to create something like that, I think was extremely beneficial, because I knew it went into creating a creating company. And so I kind of knew what the, like, if, you know, if I was hiring someone, this is what I would look for. And so pulling that into the table, into my interview, I think was very beneficial. So yeah, I don't know, just being able to talk numbers, I think is really important. Whether that be, you know, it doesn't have to be just salary, but, and other things too. Cause in PT, we don't, I mean, we do goniometry, things like that, but we don't really talk finances. And so I think, I know you brought in financial, gurus into our class. So I think that was extremely helpful, and just knowing, you know, kind of what you're walking into, because in PT school and usually in undergrad, unless you minored in business, like, you're just not exposed to it. So right. Like for me, that was really intimidating. And so having had just a little exposure to that was really helpful when it came to negotiating and talking to employers who all they do is look at spreadsheets. So yeah, that's, like performance, like pay attention to that, guys. It's so important. Like, know what EBITDA is. Or EBITDA, is it EBITDA or EBITDA?
EBITDA.
EBITDA. Yeah.
Super important. Yeah. You can tie it to a million things, not necessarily for the scope of this, but on top of that, you mentioned a lot about mission, vision, values. And I think that, you know, y'all did it for everybody that's listening. Y'all did it with respect to creating a company, which a lot of universities do some form of that. It's just formatted a little bit differently. Do you feel like it would have been maybe more valuable to do a personal mission, vision, value statement? And actually brainstorm that to find better matches with organizations? Or do you feel like creating an entity was more beneficial?
So that's actually a great question, because you know, before I landed at the company I'm at, I did, there were a couple others that I was looking at, and actually my husband now, I was talking to him and I was like, man, this is a difficult decision on like which route, you know, I want to take. And he was like, honestly, write down your mission, vision, and values. Like, write down what you would create for you personally, and then compare that to the companies, and whatever matches up the most, it's like a great way to see, you know, what's the best fit. And so I think that that would probably be a great addition. I wouldn't necessarily take away creating a mission, vision, values for a company, because I think that kind of puts you on that mindset, like their mindset, why they would create it that way. Right. But I think doing both would be beneficial, because that helped me decide where I wanted to go. So
right.
If you're down to kind of a pro-con list or whatever, I think that is, that could be a complete, you know, sell for a company.
Yeah. And that's, it's often, again, really hard to kind of reflect personally amidst all of the turmoil of physical therapy school. To sit down and be like, what do I really stand for? I don't even know. I guess I stand for cardiopulmonary right now. I you know, maybe academic freedom shows up on the values list, because it, again, doesn't seem as relevant because you're trying to survive, which is part of, you know, some of the difficulty with some of these things. But is there anything else? We'll kind of wind down, but is there anything else that you felt like was extremely important or valuable, or just any words of encouragement for people that are listening to this and maybe going through similar things?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we kind of touched on this before we started recording, but my advice would be, you know, I know it's a stressful time. Like, I trust me, I've been there. Like, you're in cardio, you're in peds, you know, you're so much has gone into your brain in the last 2 years, you can't even like fathom putting more into it. But this course, like management, this is the real life stuff. And these are the things that are going to help you create your career. And like, they have a huge, huge, huge impact on, you know, on everything, on, you know, where you end up and what you can negotiate and working with bosses, things like that. Things that you haven't really been exposed to yet. And so my encouragement would just be to take it seriously and to pay attention, and I got save all your lectures, because you'll go back and look at them. I still use that time management one. That's
urgent, important, or not urgent, but important, that sort of thing.
That one, keep that in mind, because that I use that now. It's super helpful. And when you have, you know, especially if you're an outpatient, you're working really long hours. I mean, that time management is everything. Because like we said, you know, the only thing probably more valuable than money sometimes, money, family, obviously, but like, then that is going to be time. Like, you can't get back time. So being able to manage it well is super important. You have to be able to manage yourself and manage other people. So yeah, I would say just take it seriously and invest your time into learning the real world stuff and the ins and outs of how the company works. Because all that's going to affect you a lot more than you realize now.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Obviously, you got a little bit different perspective now. It's always easier to stay on the back end.
Totally.
That being said, I wanted to wind down. I asked three questions to everybody that comes on here, and we'll see how you respond to them. But first question I have for you is, what are you currently most excited or passionate about?
Yeah. So I'm currently most excited about probably my specialty, pelvic floor. I'm getting a room. I'm getting to design this pelvic floor room and paint it and get all the supplies, took the course. So I'm really excited for that at this moment. I'm just ready to start working and I want to get good. Like, I'm just ready to get good at this craft, you know, like I've been learning all the information. I've been practicing the hands-on in my clinical, but, I'm ready to just be independent and get really good.
Yeah, no, that's the most exciting thing. Like, as soon as you get that license, you're like, now it's on. Like,
let's go time. Yeah.
The next question is, what's been the most influential thing for you? It could be training or experience in the past year.
That's a good question. I would say, there's kind of give you two answers.
Sure.
Okay. One of my CIs, she was tough. Like, she would just grill me. But everything I did, why did you do that? Like, yeah, I had purpose for everything. Like, if I prescribed exercise, I'd be like, okay, how many and why was it that amount exactly? Like, I had to have research to support it. But that kind of like nitpickiness really made me think more critically on what I was doing. So although it was difficult, I think it really benefited me and pushed me to be a better clinician. And then I would say the other thing is, I had another CI actually who just challenged me in like my thoughts outside of PT. So like, you know, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Like, what do you want your career to be? And, you know, how are you going to manage your time with this? And he really pushed me business wise, kind of like picking my brain as if almost as if I was going to like run a clinic, like how would you handle this, this and this. And so I think that was really beneficial because it made me see past just the clinical side of things and really grew me in that way. Those are both really helpful. And I think that although those questions can be challenging, especially when it's coming from someone who's like your teacher, it makes you better on the backside for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And people can take it differently. Like they could think it's personal or, you know, even making the suggestion like, golly, they're all over me. And, you know, it could just be perceived that way or attention to detail. And they're really trying to get you to do what we call like metacognate or metacognition in general. So thinking about your thinking, like, why am I behaving this way currently? Is it in line with what I see myself doing in the future? And that's like one of the most challenging things because there are clinical, critical thinking and professional critical thinking that are very similar. And then, the last thing I've got for you is, what has been your biggest learning experience, in recent history? So it could be a failure, could be a major success that you didn't anticipate, but just a learning experience.
That's tough. Okay, I've got one. I would say it was a failure, but it turned out to be a good thing. So I was a student. I was I'll tell this one instead. So I had a patient and he came back, he got an MRI and he comes, so we've been working on him, shoulder. He'd had some impingement symptoms, really irritating him, big guitar player, like he felt like he couldn't do anything. So we were working on him, are getting him better. He was starting to get better. But he goes back to his physician, gets an MRI. They find a rotator cuff tear. He's like he comes in, like, distraught. Like, he thinks he has to go get surgery. Like, he's super upset. And I'm, like, trying to damage control, right? So I'm like, oh, gosh, it's okay. You know, like, what do you say when your patient's like, this isn't going to help me anymore. Like, you know, I need surgery. Like, I felt like I failed because even though he's starting to get better, he doesn't see it. And so anytime a patient gets imaging back and they're, like, not happy with it, it's hard to fight that because it is our gold standard. So anyways, I was like, okay. So I kind of just try to calm him down. And I was like, I've got to, like, convince him that it's worth coming back. And so what I ended up doing is I went and I just spent a weekend doing research. I just researched and researched. That's my biggest tip, is research and get involved in all the literature while you're in your clinicals. It'll make you so much better. And so I found, like, a bunch of statistical information and kind of just presented it to him and was like, look, I know that you feel like your life's over after your surgery, but, you know, we found, you know, I showed him some studies that showed that a lot of patients who have rotator cuff tears are actually asymptomatic, even though it shows up on an MRI. And, like, these are the things that PT shows we can improve it with. This is my plan for you. And so I, like, came in with ammo. And anyway, he got a lot better. And he actually, like, it was awesome at the end. He was like, please, like, here's my personal email. Like, if you ever need a reference, like, I, you know. And he trusted a student. Like, he's paying a lot of money to work with a student who's, I was being supervised, but, like, I was his primary
person
with him. And so it felt like a failure at first. Like, I thought he was going to quit, but he didn't. And I was able to support using the literature and convince him to stay. And so, I don't know. I think that it could be looked like a potential failure, but we were able to rescue it. So, yeah, I would say that was a learning experience. Like, it's really, really frustrating as a new grad when you can't get somebody better.
Frustrating, like, across all levels.
Yeah. So, yeah. Like, you feel like you're a bad PT. Like, you're like, oh my gosh, I can't figure out what's wrong with you, or my techniques aren't working. Like, maybe, like, especially, like, I'm 5'3" and, like, 115. Like, maybe I'm just not strong enough to manipulate you the way you need it, you know, or whatever it is. But I think just staying confident in yourself and staying up to date on the research, don't slack in that. Having people that you trust who can, like, send you good stuff, that's really important. But don't losing confidence in yourself just because you haven't found the right treatment yet. It's not that you can't find it, you just haven't found it yet. So that's really, really hard when you're practicing. You just, you don't feel like you're doing it right or whatever, but you just have to keep trying and know that that's why they call it practicing PT.
Yeah, so. That's for sure. That's really strong advice. It does. You would think that it gets easier and the stakes just become higher, is, oh, you've had all of this training and you don't know what's wrong with me. Then you almost feel like a bigger letdown. Like, aren't you faculty somewhere? You know, like, shouldn't you wrote the book on this, right? Like, so yeah, we feel that, we call it sometimes like an imposter syndrome. Like, what am I even doing here? Why am I telling this person what they should do? And it comes down to, if you do your research and looking out for what's in the best interest of the patient, like, you're doing the right thing. We can't, you know, fix everything. So good perspective on that. I don't want to steal any more of your time, but before we leave, I wanted to make sure that listeners are able to contact you if they found something interesting or wanted to talk with you a little bit further. What's the best way to contact you in the future, or how should people be directed to you?
Yeah, so my emails are about to change because I just changed my name and I'm about to start a new job. So once I get that email, I'll get it to you as soon as I can. And if you'll put it in the notes, that'd be awesome. I'd love for anybody to reach out if they have any questions, or, you know, I know boards is upon them soon. So if they have any study questions, feel free to let me know.
Awesome, Celia. Well, thank you so much. And I'm sure we'll have you on in the future. So best of luck with everything in the future for you and in the boards specifically.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And that's all for this episode of Spilling the DPT. We'll look forward to spilling with y'all next time. And if you don't mind, in the meantime, drop us a rating and a comment.